You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
The It Gets Better Project was launched on this program in 2010. Sometimes it's funny, people will write me and say, oh my God, have you ever heard of this It Gets Better Project thing? Yeah, I've heard of it. Terry and I, my husband and I, we launched that. We created that. And it was first rolled out here on the Savage Lovecast. And the idea behind it was getting LGBT adults to share their wisdom, how they made it better for themselves, what they did, you know, what they said to their parents, what they said to their friends, what they did if they were being bullied to survive and get through that with LGBT youth. You know, when you think about it, a kid who's bullied because of his race or her faith or her class, go home to parents of the same faith, same race, same class that they can turn to for advice. The queer kid doesn't go home to that. All too often that queer kid goes home to parents who are also bullying them, which is often the case with conservative, religious, fundamentalist, evangelical, shitbag parents. The It Gets Better Project, out of the gate, was attacked by religious conservatives. And leading the attack, Tony Perkins, head of the Family Research Council, perhaps the most powerful evangelical conservative Christian in the country. In August of 2011, Perkins sent a fundraising letter to the Family Research Council dupes out there that reads in part, "The videos are titled It Gets Better. They are aimed at persuading kids that although they'll face struggles and perhaps bullying for coming out as homosexual or transgendered or some other perversion, life will get better. It is disgusting. It is part of a concerted effort to persuade kids that homosexuality is okay and actually to recruit them into that lifestyle." The Family Research Council, which again, Tony Perkins heads, declared an anti-gay hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center. They have attacked queer people, gays, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people repeatedly as perverts, as predatory, as targeting youth, targeting teenagers. So, It Gets Better Project, terrible, awful, recruiting kids, Family Research Council, gay people, terrible, awful, preying on children. Bear all that in mind. While you read, and you should go read, the report at the Washington Post from November 17th headlined "How a Conservative Group Dealt with a Fondling Charge Against a Rising GOP Star" by Kimberly Kindy and Elise Vibeck. Turns out at a conference at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel near Washington, D.C., where money was being raised for a rising star in evangelical politics, that rising star invited an 18-year-old boy, the son of a couple of the major donors to this organization, up to his hotel room to crash after partying in Washington, D.C., and at 4 a.m., that 18-year-old boy fled that rising evangelical Christian right-wing politics star's bedroom because the candidate allegedly, then candidate, allegedly opened his fly in the middle of the night and grabbed his dick. The boy went to his parents, told them what happened, and the parents went to the head of the organization that was having the fundraiser for this rising star in evangelical politics. The head of that organization, Tony fucking Perkins. The organization, not Family Research Council, a related organization, Council for National Policy. And Perkins, in an email, replied to this boy's parents saying, "Trust me, this will not be ignored nor swept aside. It will be dealt with swiftly, but with prudence." And prudence seemed to dictate doing exactly nothing. Prudence seemed to dictate telling the candidate, "Hey, you need to knock that shit off." Apparently, Perkins was aware that this wasn't the only incident in this rising star in evangelical politics past. Quote, from the emails, and they got all the emails. God bless the Washington Post and these two reporters. They got all the emails related to this incident. Tony Perkins, going forward so soon by running for office without some distance from your past behavior and a track record of recovery carries great risk for you and for those who are supporting you, Perkins wrote to the candidate in December of 2015. This guy, Wesley Goodman, ran for office, got elected to the Ohio State Legislature using the money that Perkins helped him raise. Perkins didn't endorse him. The group withdrew its endorsement, but in a tight race, again, using the money Perkins helped raise, he won a three-way primary. He won that three-way primary, got the Republican nomination, and sailed into this seat. Probably wouldn't have won if Perkins had come forward with these allegations, with this incident, and whatever previous misbehavior Perkins had been aware of, but Perkins did not do that. Perkins seems to have covered this up. That's how Slate interpreted the events related in the Washington Post. And you should go to the Washington Post again and read that article. And there really is no other interpretation. Backing way the fuck up to the It Gets Better project, Perkins claims that the gay lifestyle, quote unquote, is dangerous and unhealthy and points to the suicide rate. Gay kids, queer kids, are four times likelier to attempt suicide. But a queer kid whose parents reject them, queer kids whose parents are hostile, eight times greater risk of suicide. Parental hostility, family hostility, doubles a queer kid's already quadrupled risk of suicide. And what does Tony Perkins tell parents to do? Exactly what the research and data shows, and Tony Perkins damn well knows, or should damn well knows, doubles that queer kid's already quadrupled risk for suicide. And Perkins tells parents to do that. Tells parents to do what will drive their kids closer to suicide. And then Perkins turns around and points to the LGBT youth suicide rate as evidence that the quote-unquote gay lifestyle is dangerous and unhealthy. It is a neat trick. And it is why I have said in the past and will say again, and Tony Perkins has threatened to sue me for saying this, that Tony Perkins sits on a pile of dead gay kids at work every day. Sits down at his desk on a pile of dead gay kids. Tony Perkins and the Family Research Council, they say that gay people are out there preying on children and that we need to be exposed. They're going to expose the homosexual agenda. And then Tony Perkins finds out from a supporter, from a major donor, that this twisted, tormented closet case assaulted their 18-year-old teenage son in his hotel room in the middle of the night and privately communicates to this candidate his displeasure. But when this candidate goes through to get elected, Perkins says nothing. This candidate, Wesley Goodman, member of the Ohio State Legislature, you may have heard his name in the last week, independent of this story in the Washington Post about Perkins' history with him, because he just had to resign from the Ohio State Legislature because he got caught having consensual but warped, twisted, tormented closet case gay sex in his office at the Ohio State Legislature. Apparently there's a videotape out there somewhere circulating, which is why he just resigned from a position of power that he would not have held if Tony Perkins hadn't have covered up this assault. Sorry, I know that I'm ranting, but this is rant worthy. Jumping back to the Washington Post report, the letter that Perkins sent to Goodman, suggests that Goodman had admitted to inappropriate behavior and was receiving counseling. Perkins cautioned him against pursuing a political career without addressing his previous actions. Quote, "You have only begun the process of restoration," Perkins wrote. All right, this is what Perkins thinks. This is what Perkins claims to believe, that people aren't gay, that no one is fundamentally, biologically, intrinsically, essentially gay, that gay people are just sinning, that we're all straight, but some of us sin with dick. Some guys out there sinning on cock. And the love of Christ and maybe a capital gains tax cut can fix all that. That can cure gay people, can heal us, save us. We can be restored. And of course, we can't. And there is nothing more dangerous rattling around out there in the world, nothing that's a bigger threat to 18-year-old sons of prominent donors to your organization than the tormented, self-hating, warped closet case with power. Google Ted Haggard. Google Larry Craig. Google George Reekers. Perkins, hey, Tony, if you're listening, you won't have to Google George Reekers. You know who he was or is. George Reekers was a founding board member of the Family Research Council, a pioneer in the field of conversion therapy, responsible for torturing many effeminate gay boys to death. There's a documentary out there about that. And Reekers was famously caught traveling through Europe, returning from Europe with a male prostitute he took on vacation with him to, quote unquote, lift his luggage, because Reekers couldn't lift his luggage. Lift his luggage, needed a male prostitute. Couldn't hire a red cap in an airport in Spain, had to bring a male prostitute, as one does. One brings a male prostitute to lift your luggage, because really, who else can lift luggage in the particular way you wish to have your luggage lifted than a male prostitute? So if the guy who invented conversion therapy can't be converted, Perkins should damn well know that Wesley Goodman could not be restored. That Wesley Goodman needed to accept himself, kind of like Perkins needs to accept that gay people exist. And we want a culture that accepts and embraces gay people and our existence, because then you get happy, healthy, well-adjusted gay people. You don't get married family values conservatives lunging at 18-year-old cock in hotel rooms at conservative conferences. Wesley Goodman, of course, had to resign after getting caught having consensual, twisted, warped, closet case gay sex in his offices. Seems to me that it is also time, way past time, for Tony Perkins to resign in shame from the Family Research Council, in part for covering up a sexual assault of a teenage boy perpetrated by that same Wesley Goodman years earlier. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, Esther Perel and I in conversation at the Orpheum Theater in Vancouver, British Columbia, about her new book, The State of Affairs, Rethinking Infidelity. If you're not already a subscriber, go to savagelovecast.com where you can subscribe to the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, twice as much show and no ads, savagelovecast.com. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by AdamandEve.com. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, the online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Save $50 toward a mattress purchase by going to casper.com/savagelove and entering the promo code SAVAGELOVE. This episode is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I need help with a conflict I have in my head. My wife and I are in our 40s, have been married over 20 years, and are best friends and very happy together. My wife has always had a bi-curious side, and we fantasized about her with women together and have enjoyed going to strip clubs together, and that always makes her a tiger in bed. She has a very good friend who is very sweet and attractive, who we both adore. My wife recently went on a weekend trip with her and several other friends, and in a drunken, horny stupor, kissing led to fondling, which led to going down on each other. I've often told my wife, should the opportunity arise, she should take advantage of it, and I even admit, when she was leaving for the trip, I jokingly gave permission for her to have fun, knowing they would be sharing a room together. And by have fun, I meant have fun. Of course, I never actually believed it would happen, but over the years, I've been sort of a cheerleader for it. When she revealed it, I've never been so turned on. I pressed her for details, and we had incredible sex while she described it to me. The resentment set in the next day. I started having thoughts of her being intimate with someone else and began to be anxious and envious that she had been with someone and I hadn't and didn't want to be. Part of this might be because she waited 2 months to tell me because of reasons of her own, which I understood. My wife also poo-pooed it as no big deal because she didn't orgasm and refuses to call it what it was, preferring the term sexual relations to sleeping together or having sex. I don't consider it cheating for my part, since technically I encouraged it, but it's more significant than she lets on. She says it's a one-time thing she wanted to experience and see if she had the guts to do. She says she didn't plan it, it just happened, but in my head, that means it could just happen with another man, too, which is irrational. Part of my resentment is that I wasn't there, even though she says she wished I were there, and the whole time, and the thought of me being turned on by it got her even more aroused. She said she's been dying to tell me, and now that I have some resentment, she almost regrets it. I'm happy she did, and I'm glad it was with the person she had the experience with. If it were anyone else, I don't think I would feel the same. You only have one life, and I'm proud of her and happy that she finally got to have this experience. The conflict I'm having is that on one hand, I feel a little responsible for it, and I'm okay with it, and I get extremely aroused by thinking about it. But on the other, I'm resentful and envious that someone else has been intimate with my wife. Dan, please help me reconcile these conflicting emotions.
Esther Perel, who wrote Mating in Captivity, has a new book out, Rethinking Infidelity, that everyone who's married and been cheated on or cheated should read, and everyone who's married and hasn't been cheated on or hasn't cheated should also read because it might happen. She's also the host of the really terrific new Audible series and podcast, Where Should We Begin? She says this thing that's so smart and intuitive about what we want from our long-term relationships, our stable, committed, monogamous relationships, I think she's talking about here, which is we want stability and familiarity, but we also want adventure and we want eroticism, which is often about the unknown and the unknowable and the unbridgeable. And how do we reconcile those two things? And Esther says that perhaps this isn't something that we can reconcile, but a paradox that we manage. And Esther makes the point that this isn't necessarily something that we can reconcile, not a problem that we can solve. It is, however, a paradox that we can manage. pivoting from Aster and Paradox You Manage, there's something that gets talked about a lot in BDSM circles. It's called sub drop. Somebody who's a submissive who wants to do some crazy bondage or masochistic things, all those things happen. And after it's all over, everything you wanted and the big orgasm, they kind of fall a little bit. They kind of feel a little bit drained. And some people, in feeling drained, sometimes the draining is a literal process, they feel sad or sadness comes in. And I think often people are just mistaking that drained feeling, that empty feeling, that satiated feeling for sadness. And sadness is kind of like being welcomed into that empty space. But sub drop, it's a thing that people talk about in BDSM land. And I think reading cuckold forums and talking to guys who are cuckolds and wanted to be cuckolds, and then it finally happens, not that I'm calling you a cuckold, that there's this kind of cuck drop, this thing that you've always fantasized about, your wife sleeping with someone else. It finally happens and you're totally turned on by it, and your wife tells you all about it, and you guys have amazing, hot, passionate sex as she shares with you the details of the infidelity that isn't an infidelity because it was consensual and agreed to and there was permission. And after you come, after the guy who got cucked, who always wanted to be a cuck, blows his big cuck load, sad, resentment even sort of wells up in him. Oh my God, my wife was intimate with someone else. Cuck drop. Kind of like sub drop. And I think you're experiencing a little bit of cuck drop here. And so what do you do? Well, you manage the paradox, like Aster Perel might say. This turns you on. I don't think you want to stop doing this. It sounds like you and your wife going to strip clubs. It sounds like you and your wife being able to talk about her desire for women, her desire for lesbo sex, that fuels a great deal of your sexual connection. And that improves your marriage to a great extent. It really has informed your erotic script and bound you two together and made your marriage more passionate and pleasurable for both of you. And now that it's fully realized, now that she has slept with someone else with your bi off, you're in different territory and it's new territory. The talking about it and going to strip clubs, all of that old territory. You're in new territory. The talking about it and fucking about it and going to strip clubs about it, that was old territory that you were very familiar with and you really probably built up to very gradually over time. And then you took this leap where you're on new territory and you can't build up gradually over time to wife sleeping with someone else. That's a binary that has happened or it hasn't happened. And there's no like slow lead for that. There's no build for that. You just are in a new unfamiliar place and it's bringing out of you unfamiliar emotions and conflicted emotions. And so paradoxically, I think the way that you reconcile this is by running toward it. Your wife has to allow you to feel your feelings just as you've allowed her to feel her feelings, her desire for others, and act on those desires. She has to honor and allow you to feel your insecurities, even your resentments. You can't punish her for it. You can't retaliate against her for doing what you gave her permission to do, what you encouraged her to do. But she has to acknowledge and can acknowledge that this puts you in a more difficult, emotionally fraught place than she's in. Your spouse slept with someone else. Her spouse didn't. She can honor that that makes you feel a little bit insecure, maybe a little bit resentful, without accepting any blame and without being blamed by you. And I think the fix for this long term is not to run from it, but to run toward it, to allow your wife to do this again, but next time with you present, with you part of it, without you missing out. So you're part of the fun, a part of the adventure. And you're there to enjoy it in real time with her, not just after the fact, but with her in real time. That this adventure that she had on her own, you will resent her for it less over time if that is the entry point for you both to adventures you go on together in future as a couple. Again, there will be moments. Sub drop happens in long-term relationships and both partners have to manage that together. Cuck drop happens in cuckold relationships, even ongoing established cuckold relationships, and both partners have to manage that together. This particular kind of drop that you're experiencing, it'll probably happen again. And your wife needs to let you feel your feelings, acknowledge them, and you need to take responsibility for the benefits that allowing your wife to be who she is brings to you personally and your marriage together, and find a way to continue to explore this where you're both a part of it and both included. And the takeaway for you both here is, this can work for you guys, but at least for the time being, you both got to be there. It's got to be an adventure you shared, not an adventure your wife had on her own. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country and on our block. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone, and that includes me. Blue Apron helps you improve your cooking skills because they give you step-by-step instructions and offer a huge selection of cuisines and cooking styles. If you are new to cooking, as I was, Blue Apron is a great way to start. Here are some menu items coming up next week. Chicken steam buns with miso kale and roasted vegetables, and shrimp and bucatini pasta with chard and yellow tomato sauce. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first order with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/savage. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. Check it out, get your $30 off, and support the Savage Lovecast by going to blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 31-year-old female living in the Midwest, and about 2 months ago, I broke up with my boyfriend of almost 2 years. He's 2 years older than me, and he moved to the West Coast, and it was just really hard. I still like him. We're still friends. We've texted a bunch and chatted once or twice since then. The reason I'm calling is he visited and we broke up. And then the week later, I had previously scheduled a boudoir photo shoot. He didn't necessarily know I was doing it, although I had mentioned it and I know he would be interested in seeing the photos. I almost thought of canceling it, but I didn't. I'm so glad I didn't because it was so much fun. The photos are great. And my question is, should I send him one or two of the prints? He didn't ask for them. He didn't know that I did this. I know he'd appreciate them. And yeah, I'm not concerned about them getting on the internet because I already put a few of them on my FetLife profile. And I've been thinking about why I want to send them. And I think it's because I want someone to see them. I don't want him to get back together with me. I don't want to make him jealous. I don't mind if he jacks off to them, whatever. So yeah, that's my question.
You dumped him. It would be cruel in the extreme for you to send him these boudoir pictures. There's no possible interpretation other than you're interested in getting back together with him, which you are not interested in doing. But that's the only conclusion he's going to come to. Why is she sending me these boudoir pictures if she doesn't want to fuck me still or date me still or get back together? That is the conclusion he will draw from receiving these photos from you. If that is not the message you intend to send, don't send these photos to him. If you want someone to see them, there are 3.5 billion other men on the planet. Maybe you don't have a man in your life right now that you feel comfortable sharing these photos with or want to share these photos with. But at some point in the near future, that man will appear on the horizon and you can share those photos with that man at that time. Do not torment this poor guy that you just dumped. And it would be a torment by sending him these photographs. Giving you the benefit of the doubt, giving your conscious and subconscious minds both the benefits of the doubt here, and assuming that you don't mean to be cruel, you have no intention to be cruel. This isn't about picking the wings off the fly. This isn't about pouring salt in a wound. This is just you hadn't thought it through, and you called me to help you think it through, and I thought it through. Don't send him the fucking pictures. Oh, let me ask you a question. Are you getting enough? And when you get it, is it fun? Is it accessorized enough? I bet you'd love more and more accessories and more fun, and you can get that by going to adamandeve.com, where they want to give you more. With 50% off just about any item, plus free shipping on your entire order. So what do you have to do to get your 50% off one item and your free shipping and your more fun? It's not hard. Just go to adamandeve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy or anything you desire. Just enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout and you will get 50% off almost any item. Go check out adamandeve.com today. Select one item and get 50% off, including free shipping, when you enter offer code SAVAGE. That's S-A-V-A-G-E, SAVAGE at adamandeve.com.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. I am a 20-year-old college student in the Deep South. And I'm calling because I recently relapsed on marijuana and a lot of shit happened. I'm currently in a relationship with my girlfriend who I've been dating for almost 7 months now. And I am living with my grandparents currently while going to school. And they do have like certain rules that they had before I relapsed, but now they sort of just like buckled down and gave me a lot of rules that I had to go by. I have to turn my phone in at 10. I can't be out past 6 during weekdays, 10 during weekends. I have to go to 3 AA meetings a week and other stuff like that. It's it's very annoying that I have to go through this, but I kind of understand what they're going through. But it's just the fact that, like, I have to be home by 6 and that I have to turn my phone in, which I don't really see the point in. And it's just really frustrating because, like, my girlfriend and I, we can't really see each other as much because we're both very busy. And we want to keep our relationship strong and have the time with each other to be spent well. And so is there any idea that I could, like, maybe talk to my grandparents or my parents about, like, maybe lightening up in the situation? It's been almost two weeks since I've relapsed, and I am going to meetings and I'm working really hard to stay sober, but I just don't see why I need to be held under these rules. I considered going to family therapy sessions with them so they could see, like, my side of the situation, and I will be going with them in the future. I do see a therapist on a regular basis, and I hope that he can help somehow. I don't know, Dan. I'm just, like, super tired of this. I've relapsed before, and it's just something that, like, I don't really think that, like, their involvement in the situation is really something that, like, will help me to stay sober or anything like that. They think I need structure, and they think I need some sort of guidance, but I agree, but I think I should set those guidelines and structures myself, because if they're forcing me to do that, I'll just gain resentment and so on and so forth.
I had a follow-up question for you. You said you relapsed on marijuana. We're not talking about blackout drunk or anything. You relapsed on marijuana, and a lot of shit happened. What exactly? Like, did you eat every bag of Doritos in the house? Did you rob a convenience store? What do you mean?
No. Okay, what happened was, the weed that I had was laced with wax.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, I called my girlfriend, and I started crying and freaking out because, like, I haven't smoked in, like, months. And, like,
for the old folks out there and the squares like me, what is wax? What do you mean? What the hell
wax? So, like dabs.
Okay, so it was really, really powerful.
Yeah, it's super powerful.
It wasn't like PCP
really
in there. It wasn't coffin nails.
Well, it was all. Well, I took a drug test a couple days later, and amphetamine showed up as well as benzo.
Where the fuck are you getting your weed?
Dude, okay, it was a friend who I didn't really know that well, and she said it was just really cheap weed, and I was like, okay, and it didn't feel like anything I've ever had before, so it was really scary. It was really scary.
Okay, so, I mean, I was calling you because you're 20 fucking years old. You're an adult.
Yeah.
Right? But if you're getting shitty weed from people you don't know very well that has PCP in it, maybe you're not an adult. Maybe you need these rules that your grandparents are laying down, but you're a fucking adult. You're a college student.
Yeah.
College students don't have 6 p.m. curfews.
I know. It's really, I have, like, a lot of my parents who live in Washington, they're very strict, and they kind of sheltered me when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And when I moved out to college, they still tried to have those rules for me, but, like, it just wasn't really that able. And now that I'm living with my grandparents, they want to extend those rules towards me.
And why are you living with your grandparents? Why aren't you living on campus? Is it a financial problem, a financial situation where you can't afford?
It's not exactly financial. I mean, I've transferred a couple times from different schools, and, like, I do have the ability to work, but, like, with my mental state over the past couple years, it just hasn't really been able for me to, like, really live alone, really. And
so there are other issues here at play where you need family
definitely.
Around and you need the structure. You do need the structure imposed by your family for you to keep your footing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it is. And, like, for the past year or so, I've been doing a lot better and actually been looking for a job. I have applied for jobs, and, like, I hope to move out possibly next semester,
mm-hmm.
which will be, like, January. And then maybe my problems will be solved, but there's still a lot that I have to do.
I'm worried. Will your problems be solved? Like, if you move out, the curfew problem is solved. But do you have the self-discipline and self-control to, if you choose to, enjoy good pot that you obtain from a reliable source responsibly?
Yes.
Or when you're on your own, do you spin out of control?
It really honestly depends about how much stress I'm having or if I'm sleeping well, because I start to get a little manic since I have bipolar, and I would just have to be very watchful and very aware of what's going on and if I'm not taking up too much. And if I am going to school and working and, like, living in a house and having a car and all that stuff, it would be a lot to take in, but I would still be able to have support from my parents and my grandparents if needed. I think.
I'm tempted to Google bipolar and marijuana at this moment as we talk.
It's not a great mix.
Yeah, honestly. It isn't a great mix. So, you know, I was calling you to say, fuck your grandparents and you're an adult. And if you want to smoke pot every once in a while, you should. But the more details you give me, the more I'm kind of like tiptoeing toward grandma and grandpa's side here and worried that if I tell you without knowing all the extenuating, you know, without knowing what kind of chaos pot has created for you in your life, intersects with your mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel so comfortable telling you to tell grandma and grandpa to go fuck themselves and move out and smoke as much pot as you want, like any college student would, because you're not any college student. You have other challenges.
Right.
And,
yeah,
you
exactly.
Know, if you listen to the show, you've heard me describe myself as a pothead about 100,000 times.
Yes.
But not everybody can smoke pot. There's pot isn't for everybody. And it might not be
I used to be a huge pothead, but then I had to cut back.
Uh-huh. Did you have to cut it out?
I had to cut it out for a while.
What does your shrink tell you?
He says that possibly in the future I could be able to smoke pot, but like maybe just not right now, just because like I'm obviously living with my grandparents and like in school, and it's just too much to handle because like it's. There's too many risks, I guess.
Right.
You know, that could happen because like they have threatened in the past to send me home and I would have to leave school and then just start working.
Sometimes under duress, you have to do what you have to do to survive. And if what you want is to stay there and to stay in college and not have to move schools again or come back to Washington State and live with your parents, then you will have to, you know, grandparents' house, grandparents' rules. And January is not that fucking far away.
Yeah.
And you can knuckle under for a couple of months and make it to January. And, you know, don't do that young person thing where you think how things are today at this moment is how they always will be. And young people tell themselves that even when, you know, the light's already at the end of the tunnel, you can already see the way out. But
yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's something about being, you know, 20 or 15 where whatever's happening to you because you don't have the perspective of so much time having already passed in your life that sort of you get the sense that shit ends. You don't do that. Don't tell yourself that. Like, January is not that far away. I think you can knuckle under grandma and grandpa's rules and make it to January just fine and treat it maybe as a little bit of an adventure. You've got a girlfriend. Maybe there's some sneaking around you can do and a little bit of rule breaking.
There has been.
Okay,
there
good. And is that fun? Does that make the moments you have with her more erotic and more exciting when she has to sneak into your room?
Absolutely. And sometimes, like, yeah, it's in the car or at my friend's house. It's pretty fun sometimes.
Sometimes life or your grandparents hand you lemons and you make some fucking sexy bonerade out of it.
Yeah.
So take the long view. And, you know, I got to say that you keep saying, you know, if I'm under stress, I'm likelier to. And I'm here from the future. I'm here from adult life to tell you that it's a never-ending stress fest. And you shouldn't tell yourself that when I'm under stress, I do this, because then that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Then when you're under stress, you're like, all right, there's stress. Here's what I do under stress. That's what I've always done. That's what I've always told myself I do under stress. This is my under stress go-to. And you don't want to tell yourself that. You want to like decouple those things. That marijuana is something you go to for pleasure. That marijuana is something that you go to with friends when you want to have fun. But it's not how you handle or process your stress. That's a bad way to approach pot or alcohol or any other mind-altering chemical substance, even caffeine. Like you just
especially
don't...
when it's laced with a bunch of other drugs.
Yeah, that's the other fucking thing I want to tell you. Never, ever knowing that you have bipolar disorder. You know, if you believe your therapist when he tells you that a time will come where you can responsibly use a little bit of marijuana here and there without blowing up your life, great. But then you have the added responsibility on top of that to make sure that the marijuana that you are using is just marijuana. That the stakes for you are too high. You know, I probably shouldn't use the word high there, but the stakes for you are too high. Like somebody else who doesn't have your other challenges might be able to like use some shitty pot that somebody laced with some other shitty shit and, you know, have a shitty weekend, but not like flip the table over, or blow up their life. You don't have that wiggle room.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, if your therapist like signs off on eventually you like enjoying pot every once in a while, I will sign off on it too. But you have to take responsibility for the pot that you're going to use. You know, the bar for you is going to be a little bit higher than it would be for any of your peers, especially while you're in the deep South, when you're part of the country that doesn't have sane marijuana regulations or doesn't have a legal market like we do here in Washington, Colorado, and Oregon, and California, and Alaska. But it's coming. It's coming. Nationwide legal pot is coming.
But
you need to stay away from that shitty weed and wherever the fuck former Confederate state you're trapped in right now.
Louisiana,
Jesus. Yeah, stay the fuck away from the pot.
Yeah.
And the Confederate flags and the racist groups.
Oh, I do. Oh, I very much do. Far away.
All right. I was calling you to say fuck grandma and grandpa, but actually we're going to end this call with me saying, you do what your grandparents tell you to, young man. They have your best interests at heart, and January is just around the corner.
Yes, sir.
It was lovely talking to you. Have a good day.
Okay, you too.
This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper. Our Casper's mattress is the most comfortable mattress we've ever slept on. Isn't that true, honey?
It is. In fact, they sent us a second one for our guest bedroom, which is fantastic because now I have a place to put you when you snore really terribly.
And that place, that other place that you put me when I snore, or the place I sometimes retreat to when you snore.
That is BS. I do not snore.
I have the video on my phone to prove it. It's super comfortable. Just as comfortable.
You have video?
Of you snoring in the middle of the night on your Casper mattress, sound asleep.
That's right. I'm taking video of you next.
Casper's breathable design, which combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce, helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature through the night. It will not solve, however, your snoring problems. They're not just a mattress company. Casper offers a wide array of products to ensure an overall better sleep experience. And Casper's mattresses are made in the USA, just like my husband. Buying the Casper is easy. You order online. It's delivered to your door in a compact box. There's free shipping and free returns in the U.S. and Canada, but we have never thought about returning our Casper mattresses, have we?
I don't think they'd take them back at this point.
And they offer a risk-free 100-day trial. Considering we spend one-third of our lives on a mattress, some of us perhaps more than that, it's so important to truly sleep on a mattress before committing. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out. Start sleeping ahead of the curve with Casper and get $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/savagelove and using promo code savagelove at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. That's $50 toward any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/savagelove and using promo code savagelove at checkout. Thank you for dropping in, Tara.
Hey, Dan. I am a straight male from California, and I have always considered myself straight, but there are certain guys out there that I don't know, like, I'm not sure if I'm like attracted to them or if I just want to hang out with them, but when I hang out with them, it makes me feel good, but I'm not sure if that makes me gay or bi or whatever, but like, I'm just like trying to sort it out because I'm still very attracted to women. But when, like, certain guys come around, like, I feel this energy toward them. But I don't think I could ever follow through with that. So I'm not sure. And I'm not trying to classify my feelings because I think that's dumb. But I still consider myself straight. But like I was saying, like, I have these weird attraction feelings towards certain guys sometimes, but I don't think I would ever follow through with it. So I'm just wondering, like, what does that make me?
Whenever someone approaches me with this very question, and have been approached with this very question on the street and in airports, I have a question for them that I usually put to them. You didn't leave a number, so I can't call you back and put it to you, but I'm going to put it to you now. And then we will end up talking about cake. But here's the question first. The question is, what do you jack off about? These guys that you feel this energy toward, that you feel this attraction to, do you masturbate about them? Do you masturbate about hot, sweaty, dude-on-dude sex? Or is this just some vague pull you feel toward guys who are physically attractive and charismatic? Which is it? If you're jacking off about them, you might be bisexual, a little bit bi. And that is a fine thing to be. That doesn't mean, though, that you have to identify as bi or come out as bi or march in the B section of the LGBTQLFTSQAI parade. Because, and here comes the cake part, sexual identity is like a layer cake. The first layer is who you want to fuck. The second layer is who you are fucking. And the top layer, it's a three-layer cake, is what you tell people. If you are attracted to men and women to varying degrees, and it doesn't have to be bisexual, you don't have to be equally attracted to both. That's a myth that floats around out there that prevents a lot of people who are bi from regarding themselves as bi or realizing they're bi or coming out as bi because they're not equally sexually and romantically attracted in the same proportion to men and women. But if you're attracted to both, but you're only sleeping with women if you're a guy, it is legitimate to identify as straight. It is legitimate to round yourself up to straight. You don't have to, and it'd probably be better for the world, for queer people in the world, if you were open about being bi. But if your behavior is all heterosexual and your desire is mostly heterosexual, you can identify as a straight dude. That is fine. There are a lot of women out there who identify as lesbians who are attracted to and sometimes occasionally sleep with men who still identify as lesbians. Because they are primarily sexually active with women and primarily attracted romantically and sexually to other women. And lesbian is the bigger truth, the larger truth. Maybe bi is the actual truth of that bottom layer of the cake. But they move through the world functioning as women who love women and women who partner with women and identify as lesbians so that they are understood to be that kind of gal. So you can identify as straight, even if there's an occasional guy that you feel this pull toward or even jack off about, you can still identify as straight. But if all you feel is this vague sense of tapping into their energy and wanting to be near or with them, that could just be friendship. Beauty is powerful. These guys that you see who are hot and attractive, we ascribe to beauty a lot of things that we perhaps shouldn't. We ascribe to beauty decency and goodness and success and all sorts of other things that you can be hot and a fucking asshole and a fuck up. You can be not hot according to reigning beauty myths and standards of our era and completely successful and smart and everything else. But we tend to give beautiful people this benefit of the doubt. And we want to be near them and around them because we want to bask in these other qualities and benefit from them. And sometimes straight guys in particular feel that pull towards a beautiful man. They don't necessarily feel any sexual desire for that man because straight guys are so paranoid about doing something gay or feeling something gay or sinking into the quicksand that is gayness that they will freak out at that impulse. Whereas a woman who feels this pull towards an attractive, charismatic woman who wants to be her friend won't have that same sort of freak out because female heterosexuality isn't as fragile as male heterosexuality. So them's my theories. Wished I could have called you back and asked you what you masturbated about and then pivoted quickly to my favorite subject, literally and figuratively, again, which is always cake.
Hi, this is a call for the woman in episode 577 who was concerned about her boyfriend's mismatched ambition. And I want to say that Dan is absolutely right. If you are a highly ambitious person, you can benefit so much from having someone who is calmer, who lives more in the moment, and who maybe doesn't have the same drive that you have. I also thought as a young woman that I would need someone whose ambition matches mine. And because I think so much about the future, I am the one in the relationship who makes all the plans. I pay the taxes. I'm the breadwinner. But I get lost in the future and I lose sight of the moment and I burn out easily. And the thing that saves me time and time again is my amazing massage therapist husband, who is not as driven, but who is loving and able to support me and so, so appreciative of all the work that I do, bringing the money home that he cleans the house. And it's a wonderful arrangement, and we've been together for almost 20 years. So keep your eyes out for that guy, and I wish you luck.
Hi, I'm calling in response to Buck Angel's advice to the trans man who sometimes presents femininely. Like Dan said, there are queer men who would accept that person for everything that they are. But I also think that there was like a lack of compassion and memory from when Buck Angel was coming out and had figured out that he was trans and automatically wanted the world to see him as trans as soon as he figured that stuff out. I think that like it's totally possible that this person is very early in their transition, whatever that means to them, and that this is their first step and their conflict with the world not seeing them the way they are. And that's like a perfectly normal first step and first stage, and they need to come out of it or move through it in their own time.
Hey, this is for the woman who is struggling with her weight in episode 577. As somebody who struggled with their weight for a really long time, I know that I never felt sexy because I'd never seen anyone who looked like me be sexy. So one of the things I would recommend is going on Tumblr and Instagram and looking for people who look more like you doing stuff that looks hot, because that's really how I figured out that I could be sexy.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Esther Perel on Twitter at Esther Perel. And speaking of Twitter, Emily Ullman tweets, "They say you can't buy common sense, but I wholeheartedly disagree, which is why I bought two friends Magnum subscriptions to the Savage Lovecast this week." Thank you, Emily, for the vote of confidence, and welcome to the Magnum edition of the show, Emily's two lucky friends. If you've already bought your friends Magnum subscriptions to the Savage Lovecast, you can also go to itmfa.org and buy your friends and impeach the motherfucker already. Swag for Christmas coming up. Christmas is coming up. Get them ITMFA t-shirts, mugs, hats, and pins, all at itmfa.org. Or if you prefer, ImpeachTheMotherfuckerAlready.com. All proceeds, every single cent, go to the American Civil Liberties Union, Planned Parenthood, and the International Refugee Assistance Project. We've already donated $200,000 to those organizations, and we are pressing forward in hopes of donating another $100,000 for you. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.